If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
There we go. That is your official list for 2024.
Top 10 with cheats.
Some number of games. Let's not call them cheats. Let's call them bonus levels. Let's go for that, shall we? I think that's a bit kinder.
And modifiers, now, modifiers.
And now we're going to get into the new game plus area where you've selected about 500 other pieces of music for us to listen to.
Sifter.com.au.
Hello and welcome to Lightmap from Sifter, our video game industry interview show. I'm Gianni Giovanni, and today, pop our headphones on and settle in for a journey back through the best soundtracks of 2024. Mina Shamali from ABC Classics Game Show joins me once again. Before we jump into that, let's find out what's been making the news this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast.
Hi, I'm Fiona Bartholomaeus.
And I'm Kyle Paletto.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 26th of January.
Celeste Studio Extremely OK Games cancels their upcoming game.
Xbox Direct gives out Doom the Dark Ages release date and Ninja Gaiden 4 reveal.
Hit card game Marvel Snap was briefly taken offline as part of US TikTok ban.
And an online retailer soaks the rumor forges with Switch 2 vague game announcements.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website, sifter.com.au, every Sunday.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/discord.
So one of my favorite things each year is when Mina Shamali sends me a big list of tracks that have made a massive impact. These games might not be winning massive awards, though a lot of them do, of course. But, you know, every single piece of music you're going to hear has made an impact on Mina's heart. Mina Shamali, who's a composer, musician, Australia's biggest Ood fanboy, really loves video game soundtracks, so much so that every year I've asked, and this is the third time we've done this, I say, hey, give me a top 10, and I, no joke, get double or triple of that. Come on, mate. Welcome back to Lightmap. You haven't learnt your lesson yet.
And I never will, because it is not my fault. It is the fault of the multitude, the plethora of composers creating all these amazing works.
If they would just
stop being so good, I just have an easier job.
You're in the right job, definitely, because it's like you just love so much, and you can find an entire year of great music to play gaming soundtracks on Game Show on ABC Classic, which you can find on your podcast players, on your radio as well. So a lot of really interesting things to listen to, and often quite interestingly themed as well. You know, you've picked in, I think you did Search Action Metroidvanias at one point late last year, so you can go and have a listen to that. I listened to this Final Fantasy ones that have been in there, all of your favorite interesting sort of themed collections. Mina, to start us off, I guess, have a think back, you know, in the broad sense, you know, what has it been like making the show this last year, 2024, when it comes to putting that sort of program together for radio?
I think it has been both harder and easier than it has ever been, because my own knowledge of what is out there has expanded. We're going into the eighth year of doing the show, and across, you know, the past 7 years, there's a lot to discover. And even revising some things that, you know, when I started, we'd find these soundtracks and then I'd find out more about what went into them, and I'd be really excited to share that. So it is as much an increase in breadth as it is in depth. And I fear, in the best way possible, that it'll only get deeper and broader, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, because we've asked you again, once again, to pick your top 10, and you've actually picked 11. You've got a 1 and a 1A, and I'm not sure how you decided you were going to split those two. Do you want to start with telling me what your thinking was exactly with that? Because one of them kind of just like, this is just my favorite composer of the year. Is that basically how it's kind of worked out?
Kind of. It's not... See, even that phrase, my favorite composer of the year, it's more... I recognize that this composer has done such an amazing job and has been showing up consistently for over a decade making video game music. And in 2024, it's really been paying off extra for Will Roget.
All right. Well, let's start the first one, which I think is probably one of the most iconic pieces of music that is in any game this year. You would have heard it hundreds of times.
Helldivers 2, what a theme. And it's not just that this melody is so banging and so soaring and so heroic. It's also that it's slightly unusual on a rhythmic bed of five beats, 5/4, instead of the kind of 4/4 that we are used to in a lot of music. He's pretty cheeky, Will, with his time signatures.
It's so iconic. I think you immediately hear it, and I think it's going to go up there as one of those themes that will just become associated with video games in a way. I think back to like the original Halo theme, for example. We hear that music and we're immediately taken to that place. What is it about this particular one that you think has really connected with not just people who love music in, you know, who are soundtrack fans, but just everyone who plays games?
The thing about comedy in a context like this is that the context creates comedy, but everything happening within that story, within that context, is serious. So this is a seriously heroic theme. If you didn't have it in this kind of Starship Troopers video game satire, it would just be a very empowering piece of music, as is that entire score. And because if you ever watch comedy movies and listen to their scores are actually very serious. Yes, there are a lot of comedies that play with those comedic type of tropes, musically speaking, but it's that these things are really happening to these characters. It's funny. It's silly, it's satirical, it's commentary, but there's a sincerity that is required, and Will Roget can write a sincerely amazing tune.
All right, let's have a listen to another one of the selections from the same composer, this one from a very different sort of game and having a very different sort of sound. That's the Remnant from Pacific Drive. That's the main theme of that game. Very sort of different to that very over-the-top, bombastic sort of, militaristic sort of theme from Helldivers 2. And, you know, I guess shows the variety of different styles that Will Roget can pull off in one calendar year.
For sure. And what I really admire about this whole score, It is understated, and as you hear, Will Roget can do the overstated thing and the understated thing. He's a master. He is a master in what he does, and what also draws me into this score is that human voice that you hear in that theme. It's the voice of D'Anthony Wooten, who is another video game composer. If you've been playing Dave the Diver, he is one of your melody makers in that game. So to see this crossover of two amazing musicians coming together onto this theme, I'm in for it.
And now let's have a listen to something else, which I think has to interestingly sit in a sort of a sonic world that we are very, very familiar with, and goes and remixes that in an interesting way. This game and this soundtrack was one of my most surprising favorites for the whole year.
Star Wars Outlaws. And I know opinions are mixed about the game, as they are with any Ubisoft game, but the thing about Ubisoft is that no matter what your complaints are about game design, about story, about economic motivation, they never miss with the music. So to work with Will Roger to reinvent the sound of Star Wars in this Hive of Common Villainy kind of way, the criminals of the Outer Rim, that has this kind of, it's draws a bit of John Williams and draws a bit of the Western. It's to video games what Mandalorian was to Star Wars and TV. And I love what he's done with there. And it's such a broad, it's not just the orchestra, it's a broad spectrum of soloists, including that main theme features electric violin, by Matheus Souza, I believe his name is, a Brazilian violinist that works with Will on many of his scores.
To me, it also actually really reminded me of some of that modern interpretation of that sort of classic sort of thematic idea of what Star Wars is, a little bit like what Nicholas Britell did with the Andor original score Andor, as well. Yeah. It was like quite like that interesting sort of like that beat. And that was electronic instruments in a way that we just think of often John Williams, right? When we think of Star Wars, but like that, this is that new generation.
Don't discount John Williams with electronics. There were electronics in Home Alone. There were electronics in AI. He can do it. he's a master of the orchestra, but he's not shy from the electronics, is all I'm saying.
Well, not in Star Wars as much though, right? Yeah. So, you know, that's what I really liked about the Star Wars Outlaws soundtrack, because there is that sort of different interpretation of what that world could be. And what I like about it, if you think about the game itself, as you said, it's from a different perspective from what we normally get to see. So it sort of makes sense that it's going to sound a little bit different to what we would actually see in the films, don't you reckon?
I do. And that is part of what makes Star Wars the global appealing property that it is that the galaxy is more than Skywalkers. You know, it is Hutts. It is all kinds of droids. It's all kinds of animals or, you know, space animals, to put it in Archer terms. But yeah, I love that we get to visit all these different corners, all these different planets, and it's reflected in this breadth of music. And for this score, as if Will wasn't having his best year yet, he gets nominated for a Grammy in the third year the Grammy Awards are honoring video game music in its own dedicated category. One of those five nominated scores, Will Roger, Star Wars Outlaws. How about that?
It's pretty good. And as we said, there are more than one interpretation of a wretched hive of scum and villainy. And that is where we are heading next.
Music from the cantinas around Star Wars Outlaws. That is by Cody Matthew Johnson. And actually, before I get into that, I would be remiss if I did not mention the composers John Everest, Brendan Williams, Katsuma Jinuchi, who had worked on Star Wars Outlaws with Will Roger. And Katsuma Jinuchi had worked on Halo. John Everest had worked on Battletech and Lamplighter's League. And Brendan Williams had worked on League of Legends with Riot Games. So a massive team. And coming onto that team, sort of like parallel teams, Cody Matthew Johnson crafting the world of the Cantinas by inviting all his best friends in the music sphere to become all these fictional bands. And Cantina bands are more than kind of jazzy bops. This was a jazzy bop.
This one had a bit of that, yeah.
You know, what else is it?
It's really cool. And I really like that because those different places that you visit are quite different. Obviously, some are more familiar when you go back to those locations that you've been to, but quite a few we haven't actually seen in the Star Wars universe as well. So, of course, it makes sense that the idea of that home planet's soundtrack is unique and it's interesting. Shall we listen to another one?
That is the playing of George Doering, who has been playing guitars and scores for many years. He's played on multiple other scores this year alone, or 2024 alone. He's also on the score for Star Wars Outlaws, playing guitars, bouzoukis, ukuleles, oud. There is oud in Star Wars because of this man, and I'm very happy about that. I didn't put it in this list because I was trying to limit my numbers, but I did not. I'm sorry.
This is what your limit looks like, and we appreciate that. But I can see, it's interesting. Again, that's again a very different sort of sound to what we would normally associate with a Star Wars film, but very, very cool, very sort of like, you know, like just interesting places. You just feel like you've just stepped into somewhere that's just completely different. It's just cool that we now get these opportunities to visit. Because, like, I remember the early Star Wars games you would play, and they basically just had the film soundtrack, right? They just kind of reused
to an extent.
Yeah.
But across the years, they've even had their own original Cantina tunes. Mm. Peter McConnell, I remember, of Grim Fandango, and who had worked on a bunch of the LucasArts stuff, had worked on... was it the Old Republic? He had contributed some Cantina, Cantina tunes of his own.
Well,
so he wasn't just doing jazz for Grimfin. Sorry,
quite a bit newer though. Like I'm thinking about like the early '90s ones, like your X-Wing and stuff like that, where you had to put it into DOS prompt in order to start.
Throwing me back. Yeah. Rogue Squadron was my game.
Rogue Squadron 2. Oh. Very good, very very good. I got that disc which had them all on them. let's listen to one more. A Cantina, grab a drink, grab a seat, have a listen to this one. What's an exogorth? Because we're inside it.
I will have to assume from this sound, I'll have to assume it is something that crossed over from Cyberpunk 2077 right into this. Cyberpunk Star Wars, I think that's... We kind of have that, but I think we could really go even further into that.
I think that's the next one. I think that was going to be a game set on Coruscant, and if there was ever going to be a Cyberpunk Star Wars, I think that's the one that's going to be the dirty underbelly of what that world will be. But yes, again, so you know, three different interpretations of three sort of like familiar locations very different sounding than what we would normally associate with Star Wars. I think I'm with you. Ubisoft games, they are all good to listen to, and they are all... I have got something about them that makes people come back to them every single year when they bring out the same
Ubisoft,
version of the new game.
If you're listening, I write music. Let me score one of your games. Yep. No. I'm not plugging in. What are you talking about?
I think the trick is you got to make friends with Cody Matthew Johnson, basically, and then you can get it. You can get
a
gig.
I am friends. I love Cody. Cody is such a lovely guy.
But he could be a lovelier guy.
Cody, I'm going to send you this podcast and you can get me on to the next Ubisoft project. Oh, Lord.
All right, let's talk about another Ubisoft project. Let's head into a long-running series, but it is doing something pretty different and I guess something pretty awesome, actually, for this long-running series.
Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown. Metroidvania in Prince of Persia. And the score by Gareth Coker and Samarad, who's also known as Mentrix. And I think this is the first time that a Prince of Persia game has had an actual Persian composer. That is in Mentrix. And this isn't to say that Prince of Persia scores have been in any way negative up to this point. They've been amazing, and the composers who've helmed them have really, in many different ways, had a beautiful interpretation of this vision of Persia, of ancient Persia and Persian mythology. And they've worked with Iranian instrumentalists at different points. You can hear in those improvisations. I will say the first Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, the first 3D Prince of Persia, Stuart Chatwood of the Tea Party scored that basically like a rock score played through Middle Eastern and Indian instruments correlating to the Iranian and Indian elements of the story. And amazing. I listened to that score. I did the digital equivalent of wearing out that disc, which I just listened to MP3s. But Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown. I am loving that mix. Gareth Coker bringing in the master of Ori and the Blind Forest and Immortals Fenyx Rising and Ark Survival into this world, this beloved video game world. And that collaboration, you can hear it. One hell of an adventure.
And it's not the only Prince of Persia game that we got last year, because we got this as well.
The Rogue Prince of Persia, in early access in 2024, but again, a lot of early access scores are being released. And similar to The Lost Crown, with an Iranian composer taking the helm. But as you can hear, a very different result. Like full-on electronics with very traditional Iranian instrumentation and musicality. And this is what drew me in, because Before video games, I was always intrigued by this mix of electronics and experimentation with traditional elements. I used to listen to this Lebanese troupe, composer troupe and producer troupe called REG Project, and they were creating their own Middle Eastern music and remixing some old classics. And with whatever EDM was in 2001 and, throughout the early 2000s, that was my jam. And in that same spirit, The Rogue Prince of Persia is my traditional EDM jam.
It's
Dani Asadi.
It's a banger. You just put it on when you just like need to sit down and write something. You can just be like, just get on with it and go. Let's go. So now, the next composer that we've selected, I think, is featured in your lists in previous years. This is another one which is looking at some traditional music from all different parts of the world. Let's have a listen to the first one you've selected. Feel like going on an adventure. How about you?
Absolutely. And adventure into African Bantu mythology with Tales of Kenzera, Zao, and the compositions of Nanita Desai. What a game. What a story. Grief, mythology, adventure, all in one. And if you're familiar with the backstory here, Abubakar Salim, who is the voice of Bayek in Assassin's Creed Origins, he created his own studio, created this game to process his grief over his father. And to do it in this magical way and in collaboration with Nanita. And Nanita, my God, had the pleasure of interviewing her across 2024 on the game show. And what a wonderful, sensitive composer. And she's been working on documentaries and a lot of TV and film, but she is doing more and more video games. She did a Call of Duty in 2023 as well. Such a brilliance of all the things she's capable of. And to celebrate African musical tradition in this way, brilliant. And have a listen to the choir on this next one. If anything about this sounds familiar or feels familiar, it is because that is the choir you would have heard on the Black Panther movies. Vocality.
That's cool. Yeah.
It's actually one of two choirs. The other choir is a bespoke ensemble that Nanita put together in Johannesburg in South Africa. Johannesburg in South Africa. And you kind of mix both of them into these beautiful celebrations. Honestly, like, I love when composers approach a culture that isn't their own and produce a very celebratory score in a way that I Abubakar seems to have loved this score and champions it. And anyone who's kind of been on the team of the cultures represented seem to only have positive things to say. And I can lay claim to being African through the North African Egyptian thing, but really it's a very different sound. I love a score that is a portal for curiosity. And if you're curious about what African musicians, and I say Pan-African because I'm not entirely sure where the specific regions of all these are, but you can start to kind of look at the work of each of the different soloists and each of the different choirs. What are they doing? And then what else do they do? What else can a traditional kind of Pan-African sound be?
Honestly, that's one of my favorite things. Quite often when you go and find out one of the musicians or one of the composers from a particular piece of music, and then you just go and see what else they've done, particularly, as you said, if they're ones who are making more traditional style music and have now moved into a slightly different area. I remember even when the League of Legends brought all those like K-poppy sort of soundtrack songs that came out, and then like one of the singers on that was Madison Beer, and I just happened to be listening to the radio, and I was like, oh, that sounds a lot like KDA from the thing.
Love
and then
that.
I was like, yeah, there you go. So those little connections that come and they just expand your musical knowledge. It's one of those fun little adventures that you can go on. Now we've got a couple of Australian games that are in the list for this year, and we're going to head off to the first one of those right now with something which is going to be pretty powerful, pretty brooding, I think.
Solium Infernum, The Politics of Hell, the 2024 remake of a 2009 title by League of Geeks. And Michael Allen with that score that he calls a Moog Requiem. It's a mixture of religious choir and synthesizers from the 1960s.
Yeah, there's a drone there, isn't there? It's like that. Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot of electronics happening throughout the score. And part of his references throughout this score, I had the pleasure of also chatting to Michael on ABC about his gaming career, and part of his references for Solium Infernum was A Clockwork Orange, Wendy Carlos' seminal score. And that's all Moog, the Moog synthesizer, the iconic sound, at the heart of many even modern Hollywood scores. And what a powerful piece of or collection of pieces of music, enough to win him the award for best music in a video game or other interactive media at the 2024 Screen Music Awards right here in Australia. That honestly, so well deserved after his many, many years just consistently showing up with amazing work. I will have to disclose here that Natalie Jeffries and myself collaborated on a score that was nominated, and we lost to Michael, and honestly could not be happier.
It's always good when that happens. You know, like, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, reasonable. That was a great one by you as well. Definitely loved listening to some of that through the last year as well. But yeah, it's one of those excellent.
Every hue of you, just to plug. I'm not using this for my own clout, not at all. Anyway, no, this is about Michael. Michael! Solium Infernum, what a score.
Yeah, what a game. Very interesting one. One that I think, will sort of, it'll sit as an interesting moment because obviously this was one of the games that League of Geeks, this company that has been around for a very long time in Australia, it was effectively the last game that they were able to make before they went into hiatus. The game, which was, of course, incredibly critically well received, had a dedicated fan base, but the international financing meant that this game was their kind of last shot, and it meant that, unfortunately, it's kind of gone into a hibernation mode. So, you know, the fact that they can pick up this prize is one aspect of, the kudos that they've received for this game from a studio that I think has been like a key studio in Melbourne for many, many years is kind of, great for them.
It just speaks to the challenges being faced by the video game industry in Australia and around the world. I'm hoping things get better, but I do not have the crystal ball yet. Haven't acquired it yet. It's a microtransaction, actually, to get the crystal ball to predict the future of the games industry. Extortionist, but what are you going to do?
Exactly. One-time use, and then there's a long timer. If you can pay to chop down the time, I'd say.
Turns out the publisher of the year 2025 isn't letting up.
Yeah, it's in early access, that one. We're early. So, all right, let's stick with another Australian game, one you've selected. Let's this is an award-winning game, picked up a couple of awards this year at the Australian Game Developer Awards.
There's a couple of reasons I love the music of Max Mustard. First being the score fundamentally by Andrew Burford, also known as One Above. I'm not sure if this is his first game score. It may be, but what a banging job. Such a cinematic score with very punchy modern production. And with this style of the game, it's very easy for something to be that punchy and that kind of energetic to be overwhelming, but it feels like it works well. It works really well with the beautiful, bubbly visuals of this platforming VR phenomenon. But also, sorry, you're going to say something.
Well, no, I was going to say, this just feels like there is a platformer sound, and this feels like a platformer, soundtrack, don't you reckon? What is it about those sort of things that, I mean, you're the music expert, not me, but like, what is it that, makes it sound like a platforming game?
It's kind
is
of
it the bounciness?
Because you're bouncing maybe it on is platforms? The bounciness. I remember looking into the music of, Super Mario Bros. Back in the day, and how that melody is bouncy like Super Mario. It's like bum bum bum. It's the syncopation. It's it is the energy, the kind of the staccato kind of vibe. Potentially that's it, but I have I mean, if you look at Metroidvanias as a sort of platformer, Dead Cells has a very different sound that is nowhere near this, but it's still a platformer sound, so to speak. I don't know.
We've got another example to play, so should we have a listen to that and see if that fits within our thesis?
How many instruments do you hear there, Gianni?
What did I hear there? I heard at least, I'd say at least three. There was that sort of like wah, 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 wah. And then I heard the snip, I heard some drum in the background. Mm-hmm. And I think, at least, what else? What? How many are in there? Go and tell me.
Some backing synthesizers, yep. Some bass lines. Yep. These are all the product of one human mouth, mouth of Tom Thumb, one of Australia's premier beatboxing phenomenons and legends. I first saw him as a support act for Naturally 7, the a cappella ensemble, in 2011. And they could not have picked a better support act because he is a superstar in his own right. He exploits technology and his immense ability to produce any sound with his mouth, with his vocal cords, with his every, and he'll run it through effects and he'll do all these extra things, but you just give him a mic and he fundamentally knows how to produce a universe of different sounds. And to have him in video games, Tom Thumb in a video game, oh my god. I remember last year's ABC Classic 100 countdown about your favorite instrument. There was a slot for human percussion, vocal percussion. And Tom Thumb played a track of him performing with the Queensland Symphony Orchestra. And like this one guy can stand up to an orchestra. So for him to be the star at the center, I'm here for it. So thank you, Max Muster. Thank you, One Above, for bringing Tom Thumb into video games in this official manner.
Yeah, it's very cool. Very, very, very cool. All right, now let's see if our thesis about platformers and sound actually holds up as we go for one of the most award-winning games of this year, and one that actually, is a game of tributes and actually has some really nice, thematic musical tributes all the way through it as well.
My favorite drop of 2024, Kratos, Christopher Judge saying, boy, into this, into Astrobot, into Bot of War, where composer Kenny Young reimagines Bear McCreary's iconic three notes of of that 2018 God of War and God of War Ragnarok. And that's not the only thing. Everything gets the Astrobot treatment.
like this one.
Uncharted, the game series, Nate's theme from Uncharted by Greg Edmondson, reimagined through the lens of Kenny Young. And really, the music in the way it's constructed tells you of the tribute that is being paid. It tells you what the game has done. Like you can just not listen. You can not even look at the game and you might be able to imagine it from the sound alone. It's like, how does Nathan Drake get reimagined in this story?
Bouncier.
He gets reimagined. Bouncier, exactly. Yeah. How do you then remix one of the most kind of emotionally rich PlayStation stories of the last several years?
Well, this is
this
how.
Next one?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think Remix is right. It sounds like it's part of a DJ set.
Absolutely. And honestly, so the voice of Julie Elvin and the score to Horizon Zero Dawn and Forbidden West, they're getting a real workout in 2024. Because you had it in Astrobot, you have it in the remastered Horizon Zero Dawn, you have Lego Horizon. You know, those themes are really enjoying another moment in the sun, and I love that. And Julie Elvin, the voice of Horizon Zero Dawn, we've spoken on many occasions, and I've interviewed her for publications before. What a humble superstar, not just celebrating her own work, but just the context in which her work has occurred and the composers that she's worked with, Joris de Man, The Flight, Niels van der Leest, Oleksa Lazochuk, Jonathan Williams, all these Horizon composers. The original Horizon scores are a total of maybe more than 10 hours. Like 4 hours, but more than 12 hours, 4 hours for Zero Dawn, 8 hours for Forbidden West. Then you got the DLCs as well. But to bring it back to Astrobot, this is all in celebration of Kenny Young. And it's great to celebrate what he's reinvented, but it's also to celebrate his originality. His Astrobot theme is wonderful.
Mouth harp? Is that what it is?
Yes, I'd imagine that. Yeah. It sounds like it. There is a plethora of different instruments that Kenny employs here. And yes, this also sounds like a tribute to the Spaghetti Western and the work of Ennio Morricone, but it is a remix of his own original themes that he's written for Astrobot across the years. And to have that be kind of your home hub, the crash sites, as I went out on Twitter/X, my God, what do we call it now? And I said, oh, like, you know, I love that mix of, you know, Ennio Morricone and EDM. And Kenny responds, you mean Morricone DM? And I was like, yes, oh my God, my guy, you're here for the puns. I'm here for you. I love composers who do puns.
Well, let's have a listen to another track from slightly different sort of world. But
Ever so slightly different.
But I think that this particular, I guess, genre, which is to say JRPGs, are what I sort of associate with the sort of bridging of the gap of what, you know, originally would have sounded like filmic music. And now became video game music. There are composers in the past, of course, which are, you know, have a lot to do with that. And this is one that I think is a really interesting example that kind of, you know, takes some of that in that sort of scale that we feel in those Japanese role-playing games. And a translation of that one, please, Mina.
I unfortunately have no translation to the words, but I have a translation for the spirit of it. This is the music of Metaphor Rifantazio, however you pronounce that. I'm not entirely sure how the game pronounces its own name, but Shoji Meguro creates an incredible score like he's done for all the Persona games, right? But then he gets on board an actual Buddhist priest, a chief priest of the Myoyoji Temple, Kaiseki Honryo. And there's, you know, I spoke about sincerity with Helldivers.
Yeah.
This is sincerity. This amazing monk is taking this as seriously as any of his religious duties. And if you've seen the live performances, it's the monk sitting there chanting as he would in the temple, while people dressed as characters from the game walk on stage and display it. And this, how many game soundtracks can you say feature an actual Buddhist priest turning them into a banger?
All right, now let's look at one of these ones that I think is, I actually really, really loved the soundtrack of the previous game that came out. It was that this team had actually worked on. It's actually one of the ones that I have on my phone at all times because it's so cool. I'm really interested to see how this team has come together again to work on a game that I think a lot of people are saying one of the sleeper indie hits of 2024.
This has a really fun title, Lorelei and the Laser Eyes. It's rhythmic, it's beautiful. And this soundtrack surprised me. Not that it didn't surprise me because I expected less. It's because I didn't know what to expect. And then when I played it, I was like, oh, this is what you're doing. Composers Jonathan Eng, Daniel Olsen, Liana Olsen, who is also the cellist, Liana Olsen, creating this contemporary experimental chamber score, sort of this cross between classical chamber music, electronic music from the 1960s, and film noir. And this is just a very small slice of what to expect in that score. And I haven't played the game. I don't think I need to understand how brilliant it is.
I think you should play the game. This is a good one to play. No, if you're going to play one of them, because I know you do generally play about one game a year. So I reckon maybe give this one a go.
Oh, but this is... So there are some scores, very few scores, that when I hear them, I'm like, this is the kind of thing, if I were going to a contemporary classical performance that embraces kind of like post-20th century experimental tradition, not experimental ideas, and tries to push them, this would be something I'd go to. Not necessarily in like something like a Hamer Hall or a Sydney Opera House, but more like a Melbourne Recital Center in one of those halls. I don't know how to, this is the only way I can describe it. It's like a mid-sized concert venue for contemporary classical music. This is what I'd be listening to, I think. Lorelei and the Laser Eyes.
If you haven't gone back and listened, so the previous game is Sayonara Wild Hearts, which has like this sort of like very pop music aesthetic that kind of interprets, apparently a bit of Sia, a bit of Churches, a bit of Carly Rae Jepsen, but also incorporates a lot of Debussy's Clair de Lune as well, which is like runs through the whole way through it. So again, one of these soundtracks that I really love and really interesting ones to listen to. And there are some genuine pop bangers in that one as well. So pick that soundtrack up. I reckon that game you could get for next to nothing. It's definitely one of the most interesting ones from an interesting team.
That's my homework.
There you go. You've got two games to play now. So. all right, so we are nearly at the end. We've only got a few more to go, and now we're going to go for something which I think is a little bit different, I guess a bit melancholy in its title, but let's just have a listen.
The Thaumaturge. It's a game that depicts an alternate version of Poland. I believe leading up to or around World War I.
A bit earlier than that, actually, around 1905.
Yes. Leading up to is what I think I was thinking of. Now, I don't know what I could tell you about this game or the story, but I could listen to this score all damn day. And I have. I have put this score on and lost track of where I was in it. I was like, has that score really been running for the last 45 minutes? And I haven't even realized because I've just been so engrossed in its vibe, in its atmosphere. And those composers, Agnieszka Wlazły and Sebastian Szczyński, what an incredible feat. It's the whole score. Sometimes in video games, it's easy to create a mostly electronic or virtual score, like where you don't really have live instruments, you just approximate it. But this feels like an entirely live score that almost seems semi-improvised by virtuosos. Again, like Lorelei and the Laser Eyes, this is the kind of thing I'd go to see in concert. I'd just go to see this small ensemble of like five people just going nuts on their instruments. And when I say going nuts, I don't mean just shredding all the time. There's a delicacy, there's a sensitivity, but within that, such control. And the kind of control I envy as an instrumentalist. It's like, I want to be able to do this. And it, to them, it's like breathing. And that's this score. And the Thaumaturge, they do explain within the context of the story that it means the miracle worker. And these composers, these musicians, very aptly named.
Well, we are at our final pick. This is
number, quote unquote, 10.
Yeah, 10. It's 11 out of, top 10. This is number 11 soundtrack. Even though I think we had a few soundtracks at the beginning, so it's actually probably more like 14. There you go. Anyway, this is the last one. And this one, I think you probably would, tell me if I'm wrong, it sounds more likely to appear in the standard playlist of ABC Classic than we would find on the game show, because this feels like it is, you know, heading in into that direction. So let's have a listen to this musical piece from a musical themed game.
This is the music of the game Symphonia, which came out towards the end of the year, and I was so glad that I caught it, that I came across it through the YouTube channel of one of my friends, Marco Meatball. If you follow him, he's an opera singer, a retired opera singer who spends his time analyzing and exploring video game music with his audience through YouTube. And so he was raving on about Symphonia, and I was like, what is this? Why haven't I heard of this game? Or I'd heard a bit of this game, but my God, I am so glad I came across it. Those composers, Olivier Esman, Lou Corrier, and Alexandre Bucat-Français, what a brilliant tribute they've created. The game itself, your character is a violinist in a world energized and run by music. And when the music goes away, they go searching for the music. So they go through the the Valley of the Woodwinds, the Field of Strings, the Castle of Brass, something like that. It's the music is into the most powerful integration of music and video game mechanics and story I've seen in a while, maybe since Stray Gods, almost since Stray Gods. But again, like the previous game, all performed live by the scoring orchestra of Paris. And to have an orchestra recorded this beautifully and performing this wonderfully, and hopefully inviting people's curiosity, just like Tales of Kinzera can invite your curiosity into African music, this might invite your curiosity into the European classical canon. And who are the composers that have inspired us across the last several centuries of orchestral writing?
There we go. That is your official list for 2024.
Ten with cheats.
Some number of games. Yeah. Let's not call them cheats. Let's call them bonus levels. Let's go for that, shall we? I think that's a bit kinder.
And modifiers, now, modifiers.
And now we're going to get into the new game plus area where you've selected about 500 other pieces of music for us to listen to.
All right.
So let's run through some of the honorable mentions that you've selected for 2024.
here's the reason. The reason they are honorable mentions isn't because they weren't worth including in the list. Absolutely every single one is worth including. But because someone put a limit on my numbers, I just had to say, well, okay, if I'm going to focus on something, I'm going to try to focus on something with maybe a more unique talking point. But these soundtracks, big, massive things, but... I'll run through them real quick. Here's what we talk about. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Nobuo Uematsu. It's a reimagination of an already beloved game and an already beloved score. We have loved Final Fantasy VII since 1997, and every time it's been reimagined. So worth mentioning. We all love it. We all know it. Move on to Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. Gordy Haab, who had been composing Star Wars soundtracks for the last decade plus, recapturing the spirit of John Williams if he had done video game music, does it again with the Indiana Jones games. And this score, as a bonus, includes a few musicians who actually played on Raiders of the Lost Ark. Can you believe that? Recorded in the same places with some of the same musicians. So that's really fun. Hades 2. Now, the sequel to Hades was always going to be a big deal. Technically, it's an early access. So let's put on the 2025 list when it comes out, and then we'll dive into it. It's amazing. Darren Korb, Ashley Barrett, Aaron Yvette, and Judy Alice Lee on a lot of these tracks. No Rest for the Wicked, Jason Graves featuring Judith De Los Santos, also known as Maluka, on vocals. Also in early access, even though there's a 3-hour score available to enjoy. So let's put on the 2025 list. But I will take any excuse to feature Maluka. She's been doing amazing since reimagining the music of Skyrim with her voice. And all the video game composers have been working with her and should be working with her. Jason Graves has worked with her multiple times. Two sequels, Senua's Saga, Hellblade 2 by David Garcia Diaz featuring Heilung, and Frostpunk 2 by Piotr Mushaw. Both of them, strong sequels to strong games. They take the previous ideas and make them bigger and better and badder. And with Hellblade 2, the series deals with psychosis and perception, so the composer, who's also the audio director, really kind of nails that binaural audio necessary for this perception. And it's no wonder they won for Best Audio at the Game Awards. And a fun fact about Piotr Mushaw, composer of Frostpunk 2, produced by 11-Bit Studios, one of my earliest video game projects was collaborating with him on a little mobile game called Funky Smugglers. from the same studio in their kind of early days. So always enjoy a chance to shout him out. Such a talented human. Neva by Berlinist. It's the same studio that brought you Greece and the same composer team. So if you loved the music of Greece, you'll love the music of Neva. The Plucky Squire, Mike Georgiadis, the composer, he's one of the composers of Assassin's Creed Odyssey. He's the one who plays all those wonderful lyres and bouzoukis and guitars to give every location, every character that extra vibrancy. So if you take those bits of Odyssey and put them into this family-friendly fantasy adventure, you get the Plucky Squire and this wonderful score. And finally, last but definitely not least, Black Myth Wukong by 8082 Audio and Zai Jinian. It's a great score for a great reimagining of the story of a journey to the West. And that score combining Western orchestral and traditional Chinese elements, definitely worth celebrating. It has been stuck in my head all year.
And there you have it. That's like 900 or so. And the good thing is, actually, though, this year around, like, because we've got all these honorable mentions that we didn't have as many of them in previous years because maybe Mina had more control. Maybe I had more control of Mina. But what we will do is we've got a Spotify playlist, and if you are listening to this on your podcast player or you're watching the video version, if you head over to our website, sifter.com.au, and look for this episode, you'll find a big list of all of these tracks and all of the composers that have been chosen for this, but also a playlist. So you could actually go and add that and go and listen to that full curated list. And we'll have all of the honorable mentions on there. I don't think they're on there at the moment, right as we're recording this, but they will. So then you can have a big old list of music, an unfiltered collection of Mina's love.
Well, thank you for letting me express my love.
So, we've just heard of all the things that you enjoy, all the creative pieces that you found love for this year in 2024, all of them. Mina, what can we look forward to from you and your creative endeavors this year?
Well, definitely more game show. That ain't going away. As long as I can control any aspects of it, that's not going away. So it's a lot of exploring video game music. And I have been dividing my time between radio, writing and recording for games, and theater. So it's a bit more theater, actually. And because I'd also been teaching, so I'm putting the teaching on the back burner for a while. So I'm gonna have a little more time and space to explore more of who I am in creating video game music. So that's part of my goal.
I'm looking forward to that when we get to this time next year when we record the next one to hear some cool things that you can drop in there. Mina, it's always been an incredible pleasure and an honor to have your expertise and your care for the musical soundtracks of 2024, 2023, 2022. Let's do it again next year, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right. You can find Game Show on ABC Listen app. You can find it on ABC Classic if you tune in. You can stream online or catch up there. It's a really good show. And there's just pick the one you like or listen to them all. You can just have it come to your phone. That's what I often do. I think I said last year I liked to just do chores and just have it on in the background. It's really good. It's quite good for mowing the lawn. I don't know why. I really like doing it and mowing the lawn. This has been like
it makes that. Mowing the lawn feel epic.
It makes it feel epic, definitely. Like you're completing a long quest that is.
Hold on. It's like you're about to mow the lawn. Ba 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 ba.
Yeah, exactly right. This has been Lightmap by Sifter. My name is Gianni Giovanni. This is our interview podcast. We've got a few others if you've been listening to this one. Another one called Drop Rate, where we review games, where we've actually done our 2024 list of our favorite games of the year, and there's a big variety there. So if you're looking for something to listen to before we kick into the busyness of 2025, that's a good place to go. Maybe you can see what you're going to pick up on sale. So that is Drop Rate if you search for that. If you'd like to keep in the know, you can listen to Walkthrough, which is our weekly video games news podcast that comes out every Sunday, and it is the place to go if you love games but can't spend all day reading about it or looking at all that, and you just want to get one place where we keep you in the loop for the biggest news of the week and the biggest game releases that you can check out of the week to come. That is Walkthrough. So head to our website. You will find links to all of that. That website is sifter.com.au. Now, Sifter is produced by myself, Fiona Bartholomaeus, Courtney Smith, Daniel Ang, Adam Christou, and Chris Button. Mitch Lowe is senior producer. And as I said, my name is Gianni Giovanni. I'm Sifter's executive producer. Thanks to Audio Technica Australia and Apple for their support of Sifter. Leave us a rating and review. Tell your mates. We're going to catch you on the next episode of Lightmap when we head into that in 2025. Until next time, have fun.
Hi, Courtney Smith here from Drop Rate, Sifter's video game review podcast. This week, we're playing A Date with Death, a free visual novel where you can flirt dangerously with Death himself. And remember, the Grim Reaper's just a baby girl.
And when he started calling me Sunshine, like it was an unholy noise that came out of my mouth, being like, oh, genuinely like, oh, you make fun of him for being this like broody, dark, I'm a Grim Reaper, I'm so edgy, and I'm gonna capture your soul. And like, you make fun of that. So for him to then turn around and be like, you though, you're Sunshine. I'm like, I can feel myself literally like starting to blush now thinking about it. And I'm like, oh my God.
You can get every episode of Drop Rate for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website, sifter.com.au.